A decree went out to register the whole world, a census for the emperor's sake. He wanted to count how many lived under his thumb and how close he was to having it all. Historians call this period Pax Romana, 200 years when the Roman Empire stretched like a blanket over many nations, nearly 70 million people, in a cheap peace and militarized agreement. You're free so long as you do not rebel against our occupation. You are free because we let you be free. The Christmas story begins with a reference to this framework of freedom, the way humans in power have long tried to make clear who belongs and to whom, a patriotism that demands allegiance and then calls it freedom. Sometimes it works swimmingly. Metrics and motivations that move us closer together and deeper into collective purpose and identity. And sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it feels like an occupation, like you're just a number being counted and controlled to no real end. 200 years is plenty of time to forget what real freedom looks like, what beloved community feels like, what collective liberation tastes like. It's long enough for human beings in any millennia to convince themselves that this is all there is, the tension of a status quo that cannot be disrupted lest we fear more, hurt more, and lose more. That walking this unholy tightrope is the closest thing to freedom we are ever going to know, and so we might as well call it freedom. But if I'm being honest, I don't need 200 years to forget what freedom feels like. Less than 2 years is plenty of time for my kids to forget how the world looked in what they call before times. And they could sleep over at a friend's house or try all the samples at the grocery store. Do you remember samples at the grocery store? Is it just me, or doesn't that sound so gross now? They just remembered them the other day, and it felt like forever ago. 2 months is long enough for me to forget what a 6 p.m. sunset looked like. That feels like a long time ago. 2 weeks is enough time for me to veer off course from my patient waiting and watching I plan to do during Advent into the full frenzy of food and family drama. 2 days is long enough for me to click on the package shipping and tracking link so many times I finally break the link. It does not work anymore. It's somewhere in Kentucky. In 2021, 2 hours has been more than enough time to go from hope to despair and back to hope again. It takes me no time at all to forget that I'm actually free, or to call things freedom that are not, in fact, freedom. It's really easy to get tangled up in the promises of empire, to feel alone in the struggle of this season of life. So this scene we have tonight that is set in Pax Romana feels really familiar. We know what it's like to live in a world that is held together by paper-thin peace and the threat of something worse, something unknown if it all falls apart. That is a lot to carry around, a heavy, heavy load to shoulder, along with the pressure to pretend that we have it all together, that we can still function and produce and show up like we did 2 years ago, even though we're not those people anymore. Now we're nations longing for freedom, and the paper, whatever that is, whatever this is, keeps tearing. Maybe you read the story in the Washington Post earlier this week. I want to show you a picture. Do you have that picture, Tom? Great. This is a house outside of Baltimore. Last November, so more than a year ago, when it was getting cold outside and and we were really staying apart. There wasn't much that was open yet. And a neighbor found out that the woman who lived across the street was having a really hard time making ends meet in the COVID economy. And the work that she did have was incredibly stressful. And her depression and anxiety were overwhelming and all-consuming. She was having a really hard time, and she felt like she was alone. And her neighbor, knowing that he couldn't fix this, he couldn't make it all better, knew something about feeling down and the toll on his own mental health that season. And so he rummaged around in his basement, and he found a string of Christmas lights. And in early November, he strung them from his house across the street to her house and told her to look outside. And word got around to other neighbors why he had done what he'd done, and that it was making her feel a little cheered up, a little more seen, a little less alone. He couldn't fix it, but he could be in it with her, and they were still together, even though they were apart. And somehow that helps. Remember this picture. We'll come back to this story. I used to think that being human meant that God came to be with us because we weren't great at it, because somebody needed to show us how it's actually done. We needed a real-life example of what's possible if we could just get our act together sooner or later. But the more time I spend in a human body, hearing stories about God in a human body, I'm convinced otherwise. I don't think God is about trying to get us to buck up or get our act together. God is not about the rugged individualism and the winning of this world. God knows there's already enough guilt and shame and isolation at work in our bodies and our breath. Enough empires hard at work domesticating our dreams about freedom and peace. And so when God shows up, God does not come polished and presentable, powerful according to the rules of engagement, or tearing in an adult-sized body with an army of his own ready to fight all the evils of this world from the get-go. Rather, God comes to feel what it's like to be one of us, to be born under the weight of all of this stuff. The vulnerability of being a baby in an unconventional family, a child of refugees seeking shelter, a kid raised in a faith that is pressed down and compromised by the pressures of empire and the indifference of the culture. This is how God decides to be born, into weary hearts, into the fragile systems that conquer and count us, into the mess of things we call peace and freedom that aren't. A few weeks ago in worship, we heard Elizabeth's blessing and Mary's song, this conversation between women who were pregnant with John the Baptist and his cousin Jesus, two mothers who were voicing this movement that was rumbling in them, that would be born in and through them. A turning over of all of these things that were spread too thin to bear life and let us be whole. And from his first breath on earth, Jesus does all these things. He turns things around and upside down. Angels break through the boundary between heaven's kingdom and all the kingdoms down here. They bring a song and a promise that cannot be undone or unheard or packed away in boxes until next season. The shepherds, the ones who are usually the last to know, get to find out first. And in hearing, they upend that hierarchy that has kept them on the outskirts and in the dark. The Magi see his star rising from distant lands, from beyond the bounds of this empire. They cannot resist its pull that brings them into the midst of a power that cannot be counted or controlled or contained. God comes to be born where there isn't any room for them as they're expecting room. And still they find the room they need. Because according to this story, hope does not go into the darkness to die, but to be reborn. Hope lives in the darkness of the womb and the darkness of the tomb and the softening of our eyes, pulling us from fear and awe toward the center of things that we could not have imagined all by ourselves. There's another picture from this block a few weeks later. Other neighbors joined in, and there was more connection. One homeowner on the street said, "I'm one of those people who's going to go all in, you know? So I was up late at night bending dry cleaner coat hangers into letters till my fingers throbbed because it was going to be good. They wanted a messy web of presents. They all wanted to feel like they were making and holding something together. They screwed anchors into the bricks of their home and decided it would be an annual thing. One set of neighbors that was planning to put their house on the market decided to stay. They didn't want to miss out on the community they could see forming." Friends, the good news of Christmas is that God is here revealing a different way. A liberation that delights in nudging us from isolation into connection, from fear into awe. And if you listen closely this holiday season, you can hear the paper tearing. The things we thought would be enough and aren't. They're giving way to our real and messy lives, and heaven is breaking through it, calling us beloved. So may tonight and tomorrow and the season of Christmas be a sign that you are not alone, that none of us are. For there is one who knows your name and who is already here, folding the world into deeper peace and brighter freedom than we could ever string up all by ourselves. Amen.